Stephen Merrill Block's first novel, The Story of Forgetting, is about a family whose genetics doom them to experience a rare form of Alzheimer's disease. The book's two narrators, one an aging humpback, the other a disaffected teenager, are connected through the disease and eventually find each other. Stephen Merrill Block was a guest on the show recently, and we're re-airing that conversation for you now. I began by asking him about his personal experience with Alzheimer's. His grandmother came to live with his family when she was suffering from the disease.
She did live with us while she was sort of in the mid-stages of it for 3 or 4 months. And it was at a really formative time in my childhood. I was about 10 years old, and I was homeschooled. So for those months, I sort of I was in the sole company of my grandmother and my mother.
Of course, she's in a later stage than the characters in this book.
She's in a similar stage to Seth's mother in the book's beginning. So, mm-hmm. So my descriptions of Seth's mother are very much derived from that experience.
And so on one level, this is inspired by a real experience, but much of it is invented.
Much of it is invented, yeah.
Including the form of Alzheimer's they have.
Including the very specific name of the form, although it's an early onset form of Alzheimer's, and there are several very real forms of early onset Alzheimer's. I created a fictional version of it, which would just allow me to kind of fit it to my own narrative purposes, but it's based on a very real disease.
But a lot of this is about creating fables and near fairy tales.
Right, right. Yeah, I kind of felt like, well, one thing that's shocking to me is that there aren't more novels and more literature about Alzheimer's. And I think one of the big reasons for this is it's just such a depressing topic. And, you know, I think 1 in 8 of us, if we live long enough, will develop Alzheimer's. So it's a terrifying thing. And it terrifies me. And so I think the reason that I wanted to kind of go into these fanciful fables that intersect with the main narrative of the book is it kind of provided a working out of this fear for me, a kind of a way to seek comfort.
Well, stories are about what we remember.
Yes.
your characters pretty much all have biblical names. Was that a private joke, or was that there for a specific reason?
I guess my feeling on naming characters is always that they should have some sort of metaphorical significance, but not a direct or allegorical one, I suppose. So I kind of when I write, I try to kind of create, even if it's in the present day and it's trying to be realistic in some way, I always kind of tend towards sort of mythological writing. And so in that way, to give the characters biblical names just kind of creates this sort of heightened sense of surreal reality or something.
So the older narrator is named Abel. The teenager is named Seth. I'm assuming Cain is the disease.
Cain could be the disease, yeah.
And Seth in Genesis escapes the tragedy of his brothers.
That's interesting.
You didn't
that? No, well, Seth actually...
But Seth escapes very little here.
Seth escapes very little. Seth actually was my original name when I was born, and my grandmother, the one who developed Alzheimer's, knew some awful Seth from her childhood and said, no, we've got to name this kid Stefan. So Seth is sort of an alternate version of myself.
Seth researches the disease obsessively, inspired by the movie Lorenzo's Oil. He wants to discover a cure. I wonder how many real searches of that sort that movie is inspired.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, it's a really wonderful film in that way. And I think, that, you know, too often science feels too distant from us, and that movie really makes it more personal.
Can we pretty much predict in some cases that somebody is going, a teenager is going to wind up having Alzheimer's?
Yes. Well, there's several different forms of Alzheimer's, and one of them is the early onset genetic form I describe in the book, which is typically a gene on a single chromosome. There are also other forms, like the form in my family, where it's a more nebulous source. But even in my case, there is a gene called, I think, the POP3 or POP4 gene that I could be tested for, and if I have it, it's, you know,
you wouldn't want to be tested.
I wouldn't want to be tested, no. And I, you know, this is a decision everyone has to make for themselves. But with genetic screening, now, actually, the first instance of using genetic screening in embryos was for a family with early onset Alzheimer's. They screened, you know, a bunch of potential fetuses and threw out the ones with all the Alzheimer's genes. So.
That is, I can see all sorts of problems there, but I understand why that someone might want to do that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, part of the problem with this is I think people are looking to eradicate the disease rather than to cure it. So for people who still have it and are still suffering from it, it's about removing it from the gene pool. I mean, I feel like that's where the scientific focus often is and not on actually curing the disease itself.
And I mentioned that you invented this form of the disease. So you give us the story of its founder, the first person to experience the mutation, Lord Alban Mapplethorpe. The story and even the name, because of the photographer, Robert Mapplethorpe, also evoke the whole sense of the spread of AIDS.
Huh, that's an interesting thought. I've never thought of it that way.
Because one person can be responsible for the dissemination of an illness of this sort to an awful lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's fascinating how if you study the pathology of diseases, you can trace them back often to a single point of origin. And then you think in some way, it's sort of a beautiful metaphor about being in a family or just being connected to other people in the world that we all can be traced back to a single place.
Most first novels are relatively autobiographical, or semi-autobiographical. This one relies an awful lot on myth, including family, fairy tales involving the Isidorans. Is this really your first novel or the first one that's published?
This is absolutely my first novel, yeah.
Did you want to avoid what so many writers do?
In what way?
Not just writing a book that's based largely a kind of a thinly veiled version of things that happen in your life and the lives of people around you.
Well, no, I mean, I actually think that fiction some people write better autobiography and memoir. I write better autobiography and fiction. I feel like the further I throw my voice and the more I move into myth, the more I express things about myself or the more I make peace with things within myself. So to me, fiction is autobiographical inherently, I guess. And
well, every character is you, of course.
Every character, it's a hall of mirrors. It's like a funhouse hall of mirrors where they're all kind of distortions of myself.
Even though we are talking about a tragic situation, this story is fairly charming and can be very funny in different places. Is that one of the reasons you went into the whole fairy tale aspect of it?
To try to lighten it, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was ever a deliberate decision. I think it's also just a reflection of my personality, maybe. But also, I think I was interested in writing about Alzheimer's because I was trying to seek a kind of comfort with it. And, you know, so the fact that it is a little bit lighthearted and finds a bliss in the oblivion of the disease, to me, you know, that's I was trying to make peace with something terrifying to me. So,
well, many people have written books about how fairy tales are really metaphors for some of the darkest things in life, in some cases to prepare kids for the awful things that they might have to deal with when they grow up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's sort of a, not that I'm not trying to write allegory. I'm not trying to, you know, directly say that this thing represents this thing, but I think myths allow us to work out sort of a primal scene in a way that we couldn't if we were describing reality more directly.
The book is about Alzheimer's, but it's also about the importance of the past and the difficulty of really knowing or seeing our parents. Why do people try to find out who their parents truly are? Do you think that does it really tell us all that much about ourselves?
Well, I think, you know, genetics is such a wonderful metaphor for the idea that our history becomes our destiny. You know, and I think the more that we learn about who our ancestors, not just our parents, but our ancestors were, the more we learn about who we are destined to become. You know, you think we're half genes and half environment, right? So, you know, if we learn more about our parents, then that basically means we're going to learn something close to 100% of who we are going to become.
So it's not possible to know ourselves without understanding our past.
Absolutely. I mean, if we are an amalgam of our genetic inheritance and the way we were raised, then, you know, then there's nothing that would be more revealing.
So when you were working on this book, were you also working out your past?
Absolutely. And I think in a way, the book contains so many of the elements of my childhood, and it is like a sort of a working out of the things that I loved and the things that haunted me in my childhood. I kind of think it's sort in that way, it's sort of like a capstone because I started to write it when I was in college, actually at 19, and finished it when I was 23 or 24. So it sort of feels like my elegy to my childhood or something.
Has it gone through many changes, or was it just that you were doing other things like taking college courses and survive taking jobs?
I wrote the fables when I was still in school, and then I put the book aside and didn't ever have a place for them. And then I worked in documentary film for a while, and I was on this really long shoot in India, and I had these massive amounts of time between filming, and I was in this hotel room, and I just sort of to relieve the boredom, but also the feeling that I've always felt when I'm doing any sort of work that's not writing, I'm absolutely wasting my time. So to feel like I was doing something meaningful, I started to write the actual novel. And then only much later did I realize the fables I had written years ago belonged in it. So, I mean, most of the book was written between 22 and 23. And then, I worked with my editor and my agent after for a few months.
And now you have all the pressure of having published a book very young that's gotten such wonderful response. And you probably don't have any other fairy tales sitting in a box somewhere to include in the next book.
I've run out of fairy tales. That's true. No, it's not pressure. You know, this is beyond what I could have dreamed for myself. And, you know, it's thrilling to think that there are people, intelligent people out there who are, you know, are waiting to read me and curious to hear what I have to say. I mean, that's what we all want.
There's a scene in the book when Seth has blood taken to be genetically evaluated and then decides not to proceed with the test. I don't know whether you had blood taken, but you decided not to be tested. What happens? Is the disease, will the test say you're guaranteed to have Alzheimer's?
Well, so there's two different kinds of Alzheimer's, or there's more than two, but the kind I describe in the book is the very genetic kind that is a single gene, and it's a yes or no, flip of a switch kind of question. And in that case, in Seth's case, in my book, yes, absolutely, you would know immediately after testing. In my case, you would not. It's a more nebulous set of genes. And if I were to be tested, they could say, well, you're 200% more likely to have it, but they couldn't say with assurance. So, but even if it was a yes or no question with me, I absolutely would not be tested because I wouldn't want to live that way.
Most writers start off writing short stories before they try to tackle a novel. You just went right into the novel first?
I went right into the novel. I want to write short fiction, and I love short fiction. I probably almost read more short fiction than novels. But in the case of this book, I actually wrote 1,500 pages for the book's now 320-page manuscript. And, you know, it's like I was saying, it was a lot of working out of these kind of fears and psychic issues from my childhood and things. So novels to me are exciting because to me a novel, a short story is about communing a single idea and trying to convey a single kind of emotional truth. But a novel is about the communion of an entire consciousness. It's about communing your whole selfhood onto the page and into a text. And, you know, it's more thrilling to me.
Well, maybe there's another novel in the other 1,200 pages.
I don't think so. No, I always have the feeling that I'm being reborn at every moment that I'm writing, and I'm constantly disparaging of whatever I wrote just a week before. I always feel like now I finally know exactly what I want to say, and now I can say it. So,
the novel, The Story of Forgetting, is published by Random House. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. This was great.